Welcome to Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. I'm your host, Andrew Rizza. I'm an allied healthcare professional that has worked in the industry for over 25 years, with the majority of my practice being in the private physical therapy space and in public school athletics. My curiosity prompted me to create Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast to discuss the ever-changing landscape in the healthcare industry, focusing on sports medicine, physical therapy, athletic training, and sports science. Each week, we will discuss the barriers that healthcare professionals face and how we as individuals can collaborate to make the listener better understand the industry for a better patient and athlete experience. Now, on to the show. On this week's Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast, I'd like to welcome Sharon Vitti. Sharon is the Chief Executive Officer at ATI Physical Therapy. Sharon came to ATI Physical Therapy as Chief Executive Officer in 2022 with nearly 30 years of experience in healthcare. Before joining the company, Sharon served as Senior Vice President at CVS Health and President of MinuteClinic, where she led all aspects of care delivery, business operations, and strategic development. Prior to her tenure at CVS Health and MinuteClinic, Sharon served in executive leadership at Brigham and Women's Hospital, including 9 years as Senior Vice President of Clinical Services for Ambulatory and Women's Health. Sharon received her Bachelor's of Science degree from Clark University and a Master's of Public Administration from New York University. Now, on to the show. Welcome to this week's episode of Behind the Sports Medicine. I'd like to welcome Sharon Vitti, CEO of ATI Physical Therapy. Sharon, thank you for showing up today with your busy schedule.
Good
I appreciate
to see
it.
You.
So today we're going to talk about, ATI as a company, also Sharon's journey becoming a CEO of ATI Physical Therapy, and where we think the landscape of this physical therapy healthcare system is going. So it'd be great.
Sounds good.
Sharon, can you give us a little background about you and how you got to where you are today?
Sure. I've been with ATI. I just celebrated my 2-year anniversary.
Yeah.
Hard to believe. And I've been in healthcare my entire career, which is 30 plus years.
Yeah.
I've been on the provider side, and I had kind of 3 different chapters to my career, ending with ATI, well, not ending, but where I am right now. So I started out health provider consulting.
Yeah.
And the goal was just to, I'm kind of a little bit of a healthcare geek, so yeah, just to be able to travel and see healthcare in different parts of the country. And so that was a lot, working with provider organizations, process improvement, integration of technology, big change management.
Yeah.
After that, I went into academic medicine.
Mm-hmm.
Here in Boston. I was at the Brigham and Women's Hospital, and so that was a whole different angle of care delivery. And I had a portfolio of women's health, ran the women's health hospital there, and then also ran ambulatory. And even within ambulatory, we had a whole sports medicine piece that we did on at Foxborough, which was really interesting. Learned a lot and really enjoyed being close to patients.
Yeah.
And then after that, I went into more of a corporate healthcare delivery structure at CVS Health.
Yeah.
And ran a national practice that was primary care focused,
mm-hmm,
known as the MinuteClinics. And so all of those things positioned me for really my next chapter of my journey, and that was coming to ATI.
Yeah, it's great. It's great. You mentioned CVS Health and MinuteClinic.
Yeah.
I have to tell you, I had an experience a couple of weeks ago that was amazing. I had to make an appointment. We're traveling out of the country. I needed some immunizations. Okay. I went through, and we were trying to find where to go. Boom, they set us up on an appointment a couple of days later. I went in. They were able to check all my records in and out within half hour. Amazing experience. So
good.
Amazing job if that was kind of that piece for your tenure there.
How do you focus on the things? It's the same thing at ATI. How do you think about access?
Right.
And making it easy for
right.
patients. And then there's affordability, right?
Yeah.
Making it the transparency of the cost.
Yeah.
So people know what they're getting into. And then I think the third is meeting patients where they are.
Yeah.
So that could be, you could have a virtual visit, you could have an after hours visit because mm-hmm. you have to work all day. And so just making it, and you can walk in for a visit.
Yeah.
So those were some of the key principles at MinuteClinic, and they're across any retail health organization.
They're amazing. And I think, like I said, it was seamless, and it made you feel like, it was easy for you to get access, but then also you felt like they cared about what you needed, and it wasn't like just in and out. It was asked a lot of questions. They really were intuitive to the patient that was coming in. So, and I also think that almost transitions to like our system, the way we try to operate too, right? You mentioned that access to care. So for us, like over your 2-year period of being here and learning about physical therapy and what it means and how we transition kind of healthcare, how do you see that over the 2 years of going around the country? Like, what have you noticed with access to care and care management and how the staff treats their patients? What have you taken from that?
So I think there's some things that we do beautifully. We are a purpose-driven organization. I think PTs, OTs, our PTAs, our OSS are all pretty focused on the patient and our purpose of helping people helping people live an active life.
So
I think that's pretty cool. I think we really provide wholesome care, right? So it's not just the injury at hand. It's what is the patient's goals? How does what they want to achieve? How do we help them achieve that goal, which usually relates to some quality of life thing? And I think, you know, when you're hanging out with patients, you get to know them, right? And so you understand kind of what motivates them, what their fears are, where they, you know, what generates anxiety. And so I just think, I think PTs in particular, we have a very holistic approach to care. So, which is, you know, similar to a primary care provider. I would say one really wants to deliver the best care possible. And so just that high bar for quality of care, I think, is really, really, really important. And then I'd say the culture at ATI, you know, it's very much team oriented. It's not hierarchical. People are not competing against each other. We may be competitive. We are a competitive group, but we're not competing against each other. We're all competing to make ATI the best or make the patient care the best. So I think those are some really positive things that permeate across our national practice. I would say, you know, I'd say we're a little behind digital, utilizing digital. You know, at MinuteClinic, you probably saw some of the easy digital tools. We have an opportunity here to improve the patient experience, the patient engagement. Everyone knows we fill out our surveys and our registration forms. How do we, you know, how do we automate that? How do we allow patients to do that on their phones, et cetera? So I think that digital enablement is a place where we're behind. I don't think we're behind other PT providers. I just think the profession at the macro level is behind. And when we think about retail health, that's key. Like, how do you make it easy? How do you meet the patient where they are? They want to come in. They want to use the phone. They want to use their telephone. They want to use their laptop. I'd say the second thing that is quite noticeable to me is a lot of people really don't know the value of PT. And so, which is really amazing to me. I think as we look at it from a societal perspective, like PT is, and any of the therapies, right? It's rehabilitation. It's preventative. It's strengthening, and it is could be post-operative to really help the patient get back to what they need, and it's low cost,
right?
And so I just like I think our whole healthcare system ecosystem is missing the fact when we think about musculoskeletal care being one of the highest costs in our entire healthcare system. People are not, they're looking at the surgical costs and the imaging and you know, the utilization of all those services. And they're kind of missing the boat that PT is not just a post-operative solution. It really could be a preventative solution. And I think even when patients are like, that's at a societal level. Then we go down to the next level of people that make the decisions, and it all relates to money and regs, and that either people on the Hill in Washington or the payers, and they clearly aren't getting it either. It's just not on their radar. And then we get down to the patient level, and patients many times, from what, you know, from what I hear from our providers and even from some patients, like, well, my doctor told me I had to go here. Like, they're not understanding like what the value is or how it's really going to help them. And I've heard very good surgeons, including, you know, Dr. Andrews, had the privilege of hearing him receive an award. And he's like, I just do the surgery. It's the physical PTs, therapy and the rehab afterward that make a difference in that patient's ability to get back to whatever they want to in life. So I feel like PT as a profession, as a care service, is people just don't appreciate it, don't understand it at the level. And we just haven't. I mean, again, in general, like, our society is more you get an injury and then you treat it. it's not a preventative healthcare model. And I think PT has the opportunity to change that dynamic a little bit.
Yeah, you know, it's interesting. I was talking to one of our surgeons, Dr. Thomas Gill, who's local, and I've known him for 20-plus years. And we were chatting. He was on an earlier episode, and we talked about healthcare costs. Like, what does that mean to the patient, and how does that transform to the patient and to the provider? And he really was, you know, honing in on he's got relatives that live in Canada versus and colleagues in Canada, and how does that work with healthcare costs? And he said, I think it was like the last, you know, 10% of your life is spent on that end of care cost. Like, it's a lot of money.
Yeah.
And we should think about transitioning to preventative medicine prior to make you be able to live longer as well, to prevent those diagnoses from becoming more chronic. So it's very interesting. I just, you know, obviously it's a lot of moving pieces, but to have the surgeons thinking about this as well.
Very interesting.
Because they want to make sure that the patients they're seeing are also getting the care they need with us. But if the patient can't afford that care, if they have a high deductible, high copay, how do they manage that? So it's going to be very interesting. And you mentioned digital healthcare or telehealth. You and I talked about this over a year ago.
Yeah.
How does that fit into our practice and how does that work? And I think the pandemic pushed us to digital a little bit faster than we would have seen. But how can we use that for patient care if a patient can't come in today or if there's a snowstorm or if they're in a rural area? Talking to one of our therapists today, we were talking about, you know, a patient that cancels or no-shows, you know, getting a hold and having pride in treating that patient. So maybe having something set up for them if they can't make it because they can't get transportation one day a week. Can we set up that hybrid model and could be more aware of therapists and as business owners or the business itself to be able to have that for the patient so they can carry through their care so they get better and they have a good outcome?
Yeah. So I think we're thinking about, you know, we're actually, we're not thinking about it, we're implementing it. And so the first thing is, and the real key here is, are the patients and the providers ready for this?
Right.
And so this is the way we're conceptualizing it. So number one, in our markets where we have a long wait time to get in for an initial visit, our ISEs, we are offering folks a virtual visit. And typically the virtual visit for the initial intake is, you know, let's call it 2 to 3 days versus waiting 5 to 7 days. Mm-hmm. So that's one piece where we're using that. A second piece that we're rolling out is what we call remote therapy monitor. That's for after the patient has kind of graduated or for in between visits where the patient may not come in as many times, but we're able to monitor their home exercise program and their progress, and the provider is able to see that data.
Yeah.
So that's pretty interesting. I would say the way we look at it, those two pieces enhance the bricks and mortar care. There's also a bunch of patients that never go in for bricks and mortar care. And so to me, the opportunity is if you can't, for whatever reason, there's not a clinic close by or you can't do it during the day or whatever it is, the virtual therapy is certainly an option for patients. And so that's, you know, to me, that's reaching patients that wouldn't even come in for the bricks and mortar care, the hands-on care. And obviously some aren't appropriate, so that we'd have to triage that. And then I would say the other is conceptualizing a virtual team, I'm sorry, a care team that includes both virtual and in-person. And so when we think about our providers, like you've got, we just expanded your care team a little bit.
Yeah.
So those are all new concepts to both patients and providers. We've seen a great uptick by patients who, especially in areas where there's a high demand for care and there's a lower supply, willing to try the virtual visit. And we'll just start looking at the demographic data of those patients. And then we're also working with a strategic partner. It'll be announced in a couple of weeks. Out in Arizona.
Okay.
And so their request is that we touch every patient. And these are less post-operative patients. These are more aches, brain, strain type of things, primary care, musculoskeletal, that we touch every patient initially with a virtual consult. And then we figure out how to triage them to the right care, whether that be PT, whether that be just a home exercise program, whether that be an orthopedic consult. So we're pretty excited about that. But it is, I've learned in my experience, like you could have a great idea, you could have great technology, you could have a great care offering, but your people, both your providers and your patients need to be ready for it.
Yeah.
And that'll be the interesting piece.
Yeah. Now, what separates us from the other big companies out there, even like the mom and pops, what have you seen in your 2 years that has separated us being a best in class for orthopedic rehabilitation?
Yeah. First of all, what I've learned is everyone kind of has every organization, well, probably less about the mom and pops, but more the comparable organizations, yeah. whether it be health systems that have multiple, you know, a large ecosystem or, you know, large PT practices like us. And, you know, there's plenty of patients out there. There's more demand than there is capacity. So all of us have the right to win. And what I've learned is everyone has a little bit of a different niche or a different strategy. Mm-hmm. And so our strategy that is different, right, is really around having a national practice. Mm-hmm. So what does that mean? That means that, number one, there's one front door to get into ATI to get an appointment.
Yeah.
It's the same number across the country.
Yeah.
It's the same process across the country. Number two, all of our information is on one EHR. So you can go into a clinic in Boston, and they can go into a clinic in Indiana. They can look up your information, your treatment plan. Number three, we use the same standard clinical guidelines across all of our practices. Mm-hmm. And then we train folks and do CEUs and do onboarding in one standardized way.
Yeah.
So there's a consistency to what we do. So what does that mean? And by the way, it's a fine balance because we can provide all of those guardrails and tools, but healthcare is local.
Right.
And so people like you as a clinic director bring that to life mm-hmm. in Boston differently than maybe they bring it to life in, you know, in Chattanooga, Tennessee. So it's a nice combination. But what does that mean? It means, one, our patients have a consistent experience. Mm-hmm. Number two, we can work with organizations that want to partner, whether it be in a geography or nationally. And that could be a payer, that could be an employer, that could be, you know, an athletic team or something. And so we can do that because we have the ability to, you know, to communicate with all of our practices and say, okay, now we're going to, you know, whatever, we're going to have Amazon patients come in, and this is what we're going to do for those patients.
Yeah.
And everyone's going to be like, okay, you know, got it. And the AMT, our access management team, is going to identify them. And then we know that there's a particular way we handle them. Right. Mm-hmm. So that standardized platform really allows us to, and this is where we're starting to bring it, you know, leverage it. It allows us to work with different strategic partners that have an interest in standardized, you know, in a standardized platform to deliver PT care across whatever it is, their national health system, their national employer, or whatever it looks like.
Yeah, which is great. And, you know, we've been talking a lot, obviously, about outpatient orthopedics and outpatient physical therapy. Can you talk about our healthcare division, like what does that look like and how does that make us different from everybody else? So like AWS or sports medicine, how is that shaping up and how does that make us different from the rest of the competition?
Yeah. I actually would say the thing that makes us most different is our outcomes, mm-hmm. our outcomes data. We're one of the only organizations that actually has been participating in the CMS MIPS program, the Merit Incentive Payment Program. And so to me, that is a key differentiator. We have clinical guidelines that are evidence-based.
Yeah.
And so as far as I'm concerned, like that's one of our key differentiators. Mm-hmm. I think the sports medicine, you know, so, and then everyone, everyone provides PT care. I think we provide it in a team-based model.
Yeah.
Not everyone does. And so I think that is unique. I think that benefits the patients to have multiple folks, you know, as part of their care team. I think the sports medicine, again, how we bring that to life and how we link that with, you know, with our clinics, that's a pretty traditional model. Mm-hmm. But I would say, you know, our folks, again, fall under the same guidelines, fall under the same infrastructure. They have standardized guidelines. They have a network of people that they can, athletic trainers that they can work with. And then that relationship with the team doctor. And then that triumvirate, the team doctor, the athletic trainer in our clinics.
Clinic,
I don't think that's that unique, but I think we bring it to life very well. We're good at it.
Yeah.
Our AWS program is very unique. A few other folks have something similar, and that's predominantly focused on prevention, right, in the workplace. And then we have our ATI Connect, which is really allowing an employer to leverage our clinics mm-hmm. For basically PT primary care.
Yeah.
And so those two coming together are pretty interesting. And so that is our work right now, to bring those together. They're two different, like they're two different aspects of working with an employee or an employer. But to me, you know, they're synergistic. So like 1 + 1 = 4 on that. And it's really beneficial for the patients or the employees. And it's really beneficial for the employer as it relates to cost of care. So I do think that is a differentiator for us.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's, we talked about this briefly. I mean, I've talked about this with other clinicians, but also like with my district director, Ryan Coleman, about like, how does that access, how does it make it better for that person in like working for Gillette or for GE Aviation, like their families, like how, where do they go? So it's interesting where the employer or the employee is getting treated and being preventative cared in their organization. But then their families then, hey, where do you, where should I go for physical therapy? Oh, go to ATF physical therapy. And these are the locations. So I think it just opens up a lot of the doors for people to go. But in, on the side of trying to make it a team-based model, which is amazing to me, is that all of the people involved, all the stakeholders in each clinic, like the four walls that we sit in today, like just being in Wellesley or being in Needham or being in Newton, it's trying to provide the best care possible at the time that you're seeing that patient. But also everybody's being introduced. There's communication across the board. If I'm seeing Sharon today, Sharon, I want to introduce you to Kirsten. Kirsten's going to help you the next time you come in. And then we want to make sure we're having that communication across the board. And that's why we have team meetings every month. We have weekly caseload rounds, which is unique, I think, where we can sit down and talk about patient care. And I feel that brings us further to the forefront of healthcare, is because we're talking about the patient every single day, just like they do grand rounds at the hospital. So for us, I think us putting our energy into that with each therapist and either athletic trainer or physical therapist assistant, I think that's amazing and it sets us apart.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, it's great for the patients. It's a good, we're a learning environment. And then we think about our young people that have come into the profession. Like, it's a great way for them to learn from their colleagues. And I would agree. I think there's an academic part to ATI that is different. So we have the Institute for Musculoskeletal Advancement, IMISCA. And so that is very, it's a non-for-profit organization, very focused on research, teaching, translational research. And so when we think about our opportunities at ATI, right, so we think about patient care delivery, right, our day-to-day. But then we think about our all of our providers, right? And every provider has a little bit of a different, like they want to treat patients and they also want to teach. They want to treat patients and they also want to, you know, do something administrative, right, around the quality side. So our ability to, so it, it's good for our practice to have an academic underpinning, to be investing in future providers, to advancing the medicine, if you will. In the care, but it's also great for our providers to be able to spend some time in these different areas. And so I think, and then, you know, the case rounds, like that's a very academic thing, as you said. And so finding that right balance, I think the ATI does a fantastic job with that. And I think it's even, you know, there's, we have metrics that we need to meet. Right, which allow us to, because we're such a large practice, to have standards that people work toward, whether that be productivity or whether that be how we schedule patients. And then we also have standards and opportunities around quality of care, around bringing up the next generation, around investing in our young people. And so I think it's a healthy balance that is great for our providers, but it really adds depth to our practice.
And I think the good thing too is I've noticed, you know, being part of ATI over the last almost nine years now, the ability for the CDs or even DDs to identify someone that could advance within the company. If, for instance, when I'm working with my clinicians, I can see that somebody wants to advance either clinically or leadership-related roles and how we can provide for them to make them better. Because the reality is we don't want them to become stagnant in their profession. We want them to be happy coming into work. We want them to make sure they're invested and rooted in the community. They become better as clinicians. They learn more. They grow as clinicians. Education is never wasted, I always say. You can keep educating yourself. I don't care how many degrees you get. But if you can continue to grow and want to grow, that's going to make you better as a person and as a professional. And you're going to think of your career instead of not a job, but a career. So being a physical therapist, it's a career for me. How do I advance myself within the organization? I feel like we have a lot of great opportunities here.
I mean, I'll put the elephant on the table. People are like, oh, these big organizations, they're big mills. They don't care about their people. They whatever. Those could be perception. I think they're not accurate perceptions, but let me flip it on its head. In a large organization like ATI, we actually create opportunities for mm-hmm. people. And there's a lot, there's a playground of yeah. opportunities, whether it be academic pursuits, whether it be leadership pursuits, whether it be a lot of, we have a lot of PTs that work, you know, in different areas. We have two PTs in talent acquisition.
Yeah. Yep.
So I think there's that. I think there's the ability for us to have a not-for-profit arm,
yep.
Which again creates opportunities, relationships with PT schools and that kind of thing. And then I'd say the last is, you know, we're able to. We have our institute. We have lead a lot of training and things that go on. We have a very robust CEU program mm-hmm. that we put on. I think we're doing like over 200 live CEUs this year.
Yeah,
might even be higher than that. And then we're also able to invest in things that are help like wellness, our Be Well days, our health benefits. So I would just say there are both sides of the coin, and people can always, you know, kind of take a half empty or half full. Yeah. But I would say I'm pretty proud of the fact that ATI is able to focus in on our providers and be able to unearth programs that allow them to develop, that allow them to keep learning, and that also support them, their health and well-being.
Yeah.
And so you may not get all of that in a smaller organization.
Yeah. And, you know, it's interesting. I talked to a friend of mine who's been a PT for as long as I've been out of school, too. Him and I grew up together, went to Northeastern together. He's down in New Orleans, actually in North Shreveport. He actually runs a big spine clinic and built out that practice mm-hmm. and all the modules in the practice. He had a great quote. He's like, to grow your lawn, you got to water it. He's like, you have to do the things to make yourself relevant, but also to make yourself known within whatever profession you're in.
Yeah.
So to make people understand what we do every day and how we do it, we got to educate them. And you made a great point earlier. A lot of people don't know what PT is.
Yeah.
It's our job as clinicians to be able to educate them on how it is important for their life, because a lot of this is life-changing for a lot of people. We don't know what happens to them outside of the clinic unless we ask. How's your day going? How was your weekend? How's this week? Oh, hey, how are the kids doing? I heard Janie's going to college this fall. How's yeah. that going with the family? You know, learning about the patient makes just as much difference as them coming in and doing exercise with you.
It's very true.
So I think that's yeah. the important connection you need to make in the communication. And that isn't always learned in some instances. So people have to try to figure out how to do that the right way.
Yeah.
And I think there's ways for us to work with each other and able to do that, which is yeah. important.
I mean, I don't think our providers realize the power. I call it the power of the white coat. Now, I know y'all don't wear white coats,
yeah.
right? It's like you as a provider, the trust that a patient has in you,
yeah.
the ability you have to influence them, not only with their clinical presentation, but just their whole disposition.
Mm-hmm.
I went into a clinic, I think it was in Nevada.
Yeah.
And they introduced me to this woman that was 102 years old. And she was in there exercising.
Yeah.
She wasn't a patient.
Yeah.
She was a previous patient.
Yeah.
And she was, because she had the program we have, I forgot what it's called, where you can pay.
Yeah, the exercise, the like progression.
$25 yeah. or something yeah. a month and come in. She comes in 3 days a week.
Yeah.
They all know her.
Yeah.
She sits there and does her exercises
and
by
she
herself.
Loves it.
But it's like for her, she can barely hear me, but getting out of the house. Being active and being in community.
Yeah.
Right?
Yeah.
And
that's
I also
important.
Hear from patients. Patients will say to me, they treat me like family.
Yeah.
They make me laugh. They
yeah.
make it fun to come here.
Yeah.
Like those are the intangibles,
yeah.
right, that make a difference.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so when you asked, I think you mentioned it, you know, when we were chatting, like what makes you proud when you go into the clinics? When I talk to patients all the time. And then they just, those are the things they say. They don't say, my range of motion has improved by X.
Right, right,
they say,
right.
I feel welcome. I get yeah. attention. I love that, you know, Andrew teaches me an exercise, but then Sharon shows it to me, you know, when she helps me and helps me do it a different way.
Yeah.
Right. They love the team-based care. They love, I'm greeted by my name.
Yeah.
They know my grandchildren
yeah.
or they know that I went on vacation. So
yeah.
those to me are actually the qualitative pieces
mm-hmm.
of what we provide
yeah.
that go well beyond the diagnosis and the treatment plan.
Yeah, yeah. And it's one of those things to learn. You have to be an active listener and listen to the patient and be invested in the patient. So for me, you know, I always try to find something about that patient that I can hold on to and then learn about them in order to be able to then have that kind of relationship or connection with them outside of just their orthopedic, you know, care. I had a gentleman probably about a year and a half ago that was here. He came and he just lost his wife probably like 6 months ago. He came in, went to rehab, nicest gentleman in the world. Came in, did his rehab. I said, you know what? You were doing fantastic. Say his name. I'm going to give it a fake name. His name was Jeff.
Yeah.
Jeff came in. Jeff said, you know what? We went to the other side of the clinic. We were doing some exercise to see how functional he was before discharge. And he sat down. And, you know, you don't think of these things because, again, we don't know unless we ask or they tell us.
Yep.
We perceive, right? And that's why we fill out. People say the surveys are why we fill out the VR12 or why do we fill out this? It's for us to look at it and to say, oh, you know what? He's having a really hard time emotionally. We should maybe find out what's going on. But he sat with me. We were private. And he goes, you know what? Every morning I wake up, I feel sad. He's like, my partner's gone. I don't have anything. I have you guys. Oof. And to me, I was like, melted.
Shivers.
And I said, you are amazing. Like, I understand you can always come in and say hi to us. You can always come by and see us. So he came back recently for a short stint. And every time he comes in, he's like, you guys want lunch? I'll go get you Linden. Like, he's unbelievable. But it's that interaction and that relationship that makes you take a step back and think about, hey, you're making a difference in somebody's life that you didn't realize you were making.
Yeah.
So for me, that's important. So I take it to heart.
Honestly, that is my one of my big odds with the PT profession.
Mm-hmm.
Like, your bedside manner is paramount and is probably the best I've ever seen. Mm-hmm. Because most providers do not spend this kind of time with the patient.
Yeah.
If we're, you know, we can get over to oncology, that's a whole different thing. But your PCP, your cardiac surgeon, your PA, your NP, whatever, like, they just, even if they spend the same amount of time, you don't have the frequency because you're seeing them often.
Yeah, right.
So I think that that's a gift, and it's also like it's a talent.
Yeah, yeah.
To be able to do that, and our folks do a fantastic job.
Yeah, and we're an amazing profession. I think we're one of the best on the planet. And I always say, if you come to work every day and you enjoy what you do, you're not going to work.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter how many hours you're at work. If you're providing the care you're providing, you're making that difference. That difference is making somebody's life better. So I think it's very important for us.
Yeah.
What does access to care mean to you? Like, how do you think of access? You talked about a CVS, right, a little bit.
Yeah.
We talked about it earlier.
Yeah.
How do you vision it for us as a company, for PT? Because I know I was talking to a friend last night. She called me and said, hey, you know what? I fell. I was doing push-ups and my shoulder's been hurting for 2 weeks. She's like, will you come by and take a look? I'm like, yeah, no problem. Like, I went by and took a look. And I said, I think you got some biceps tendonitis. She's like, well, I got a script from the doctor. I'm supposed to go to this other PT clinic. I go, you're going to another PT practice? Like, what is wrong with you? And she's like, well, you know, she recommended. I go, you can go wherever you want.
I know.
Right? And I go, you know this. You've been to our Medfield clinic. Your daughter saw Danielle there, loved her. She's like, I don't want to bother you. I go, you called me to come to your house to look at your shoulder. So I said, you know what? I go, when's your appointment? You can go wherever you want. She goes, the 19th of June. I go, that's 3 weeks away. I go, and by the way, this woman and her husband are going away on vacation with us in July. I said, you can't go on vacation. So that's 3 weeks from now. You have 3 weeks of therapy. Your shoulder's going to be killing you still. I said, you need to get into therapy now. I said, you're coming to the clinic tomorrow morning. So she goes, okay. So I had her call AMT. She set it up, and Tiger's seeing her this afternoon. So it's just that, like, you know, having her understand, like, it is important, even though it might just be biceps tendonitis. It's going to change what she can do in her life over the next 6 weeks.
Yeah. It's a great example. So access is multifactorial.
Yeah.
Right. So number one, it's got to be easy. Right. So you went and saw her.
Yeah.
Right. Or, you know, calling AMT and getting that appointment, or the location. And, you know, it's close to my work. It's close to my, or the, when do they have an appointment? They only have morning appointments. I need something in the afternoon. So that whole just like logistical piece, it's got to be easy.
Yeah.
So that's number one. Number two is you need to have optionality for patients. Mm-hmm. And that's why I'm excited about the hybrid care. And even just without the hybrid care, we have multiple sites.
Yeah.
So you want to be seen near work? Here's a site.
Right.
You want to be seen, this clinic has, you know, sees patients until 8 at night. This clinic doesn't. So just creating options for patients and making it as easy as possible, taking away those hurdles. That's number one. I would say number two, which is a big pain point, is, you know, Is it covered? How much do I have to pay? So that whole affordability piece is part of access.
Yeah.
And so that one's a little bit harder. We continue to invest a lot of time to get better. We're in the middle as providers. We've got, they've got a health plan, right? They've got a, you know, care design, plan design. The payer is not authorizing or waiting for the call, whatever. We're in the middle. And so that's a little bit of a harder situation. And we try, we're going to be making some major improvements through RT and different things to try to do a better job of being really accurate and transparent with patients when they come in. What does this mean? Are you in your high deductible phase? What does that mean? What's your copay? What is your responsibility? So I'd say that is a key piece. The third that you went to is, do people even understand why they're coming in? What the value is? How long it's going to take? What the commitment needs to be? Now, I know we have a patient letter, right? Or patient contract, but people really don't understand that. Not like, you know, if you had cancer, if you have a bad heart, like people understand, like if I don't take care of this,
I could die.
May not live.
Yeah.
They don't connect the dots. Like if I don't get rehab after my surgery, I may not be able to run like I wanted to or whatever it is. So I think that piece that you did, that educational piece is invaluable. And so when we talk about access, like, you know, I think it's multifactorial, and there's the logistics, the tangible pieces around the cost and the logistics, but then there's the why. Right. And people understanding the why and the value, because that's what motivates people to do things. Right. If I do this, then this will happen for me. Right. And so unfortunately you can't go to everyone's house that has an injury and talk to them about why. And many times it's, sometimes it's like, well, I know I need to do it, but I'm going on vacation. I'll do it afterward. They don't understand, the sooner the better. I think the, you know, $20 copay, I'm going to go once every other week because, you know, the $20 are heavy. Listen to me. Okay, that might be economically the right way to do it, but it's going to take you twice as long to get your outcome. So therefore, you're going to be spending twice as much money. So it's like, how do you, and so that education piece to me, I think is a really big piece on the access side. And by the way, it's not just the patients. We think about providers. We think about PCPs. We think about whoever, care navigators, like whoever it is that's guiding a patient to where they should go when they identify that they have a need. Most aren't facile in in PT and why rehab is a good, you know, when is a good option, why it's a good option, and then why ATI is the best option.
Thank you for tuning into Behind the Sports Medicine Podcast. This is your host, Andrew Rizza. If you enjoyed the content from today's episode, give us a like, leave a comment, and share on social media. You can find us on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you listen to your podcasts. You can also follow us on Instagram at Behind Sports Med Podcast, on X under AJR Sports Sci, or check out our websites at ajrsportscience.podbean.com and at ajrsportscience.com. You can also subscribe to our YouTube channel at AJR Sports Science. Tune in for part two on July 8th when Sharon and I close out our conversation. We discuss the importance of education and communication in the field of sports medicine and physical therapy. We also talk about the importance of education of the younger therapist and building their confidence and communication skills. We then move on to the need for therapists to believe in the care they provide and effectively communicating it to their patients. The conversation then moves on to the challenges of payer mix and the need for PTs to demonstrate the value of their services. We then move on to discuss the future of ATI physical therapy and their plans for growth, including investment in digital front end, hybrid models of care, and AI tools. We then close out on the importance of empathy and patient-centered care.